You want something?
I need more help finding Farouk.
Liar.
Shut up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And this is Legion Cast episode 10. Welcome back.
Hi.
First time just you and me.
Yeah, for this one.
And all the voices in our head.
Yeah, we won't get into the voices in my head and how I talk to the voices in my head.
If you could actually mic up the voices in your head, we'd have the neurotic cast.
What?
All right. Well, let's get into this week's episode. So we're doing five highlights because there's only two people and that's how it works. So it's top five highlights for season 2, episode 2, chapter 10. Did you like it?
Yeah, I really like this one. I think we got a lot of some of the really super cool scenes and the trippiness that we always get with Legion, but there was some really good, straightforward like storytelling and things that happened, I feel.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really like about Legion is that it's super trippy and it gives you that opportunity to try to figure out what the heck is going on and there's different, you know, possibilities, but it's not like David Lynch or even Lost where you never figure it out or there's just nothing underneath it, in my opinion. I mean, David Lynch is interesting because he's more, I think, about feeling than trying to impart a feeling than trying to make any sense. And for some reason, I'm more okay with that. It's like dream logic. But anyway, my point is that Legion has both. It in some ways, it's a straightforward superhero show. And in other ways, it's like a trippy David Lynch or Philip K. Dick kind of a thing.
Yeah, definitely.
So you get both.
There was a lot of good stuff. There was a lot of good stuff that you can expect from Legion as far as it being really kind of far out and beautiful scenery and some
beautiful,
really weird things that,
always
that happen.
Beautiful.
We just got some really great storytelling as well that really kind of, I think, moved it forward. That was nice as well.
Like when he's in the tank and Carrie is plugging in the wrong wires and he's like, and it's like pain. And then you see these pink lasers in these really cool configurations and it's like pain. And it's like, oh, that's so pretty. And you get them like back to back. It's like a sensory feast, I guess.
Yeah.
I just kind of like that. Definitely. It's because the show can be kind of sadistic in a lot of ways, but also very beautiful.
Yes.
All right. Well, I loved this week's episode even better than last. So let's get into it. What's your number five?
Cool. Okay. So my number five, I'm just going to go ahead and start out with. We really kind of find out that, yes, David is helping Farouk. He's lying to everyone. And it starts off, I mean, right away, we get that carousel scene, which I absolutely loved. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about mind trippiness, how you got Aubrey Plaza just licking all over this lollipop and Jermaine Clement sitting over there just up and down on this carousel. So we find out that he is working with them and he's helping them because Future Sid said that he should and he trusts her. We finally get to meet the real Farouk. He actually uses his real image when David meets him on the astral plane in the desert. I really like that actor. I like how he finally told Sid what was happening. And I'm glad that we at least finally learned that part anyway, that, okay, is he lying to himself? Does he know what he's doing?
Yeah, it's nice to know that David, he was lying, and I'm actually not clear on something. Like, it would be good to go back and watch episode 1, because I do believe that through most of that episode, he actually didn't really remember meeting Future Sid in the orb, you know? I don't think he was lying. And then it wasn't, I think, until he went into that tank and made contact with fake Oliver that it all came back to him after that. And that's when he, but I'm not sure though. I mean, was that when he started working with them? I mean, we really don't know. And I think that's kind of the point of a lot of this show is you can conjecturize, but you don't really know for sure. But anyways, I'm pretty sure he wasn't lying the whole episode, but by the end he was. By the end, he had a firm handle that Future Sid had told him to help Farouk get his body back and he was hiding it from everyone else. Another thing, I don't know for sure where he got the idea that he wasn't supposed to tell anyone. I mean, future Sid was quiet and she put her finger over her lips like quiet, but I don't know if I'd necessarily interpret that as you're not supposed to tell anyone this, you know, but he thinks that he's not supposed to tell anyone. She never said that because she never said anything except help him find his body.
Right. Yeah, I don't know exactly why he's not supposed to tell either and why he's not just being truthful with everyone mm-hmm. instead of just Sid.
He thinks that she told him not to, though, because he said that this episode. He's like, I'm not clear if I'm not supposed to tell you because you're her, you know. So he thinks right. he's not supposed to tell. He said the only reason he was lying is because. So you know, here's the thing is, it's like, yeah, he's a liar, but he's still a really good guy because he's lying out of loyalty to his girlfriend. And that's the only reason. And even by the end of the episode, he decides to go and tell the current version of his girlfriend. And I was happy about that because I don't want him to be a sleazebag. I want him to be a good guy.
he's a good guy for now.
Yeah. Yeah, for I now. Wonder. Yeah, right. Yeah, we don't know for the future. But
yeah, I'm a little bit worried based on some things that,
yeah,
you know, that we got during this episode,
right.
What that's going to mean for the future of David yeah. and Sid and what that means for his character. And
because now we have a meeting with him and future Sid where they're able to talk. And it's seemed pretty clear to me that she's afraid of him, or maybe she's just different because she's sad because she's lived through this plague / apocalypse and lost her arm. But it seemed to me that David goes nuts and he's the one that causes all this, and uh-huh. she's trying to have him help save Farouk, who he killed, because she thinks Farouk is the only one that can stop him, right? Doesn't it seem like that's what's about to happen? I think that the show knows that a lot of people are going to predict that. Because especially when Sid says, you know, you're like you used to be, you're sweet. It's like, oh, he's not sweet anymore, you know? And he asked if he's dead in the future. And she says, it's complicated. They're sending some pretty clear signals.
I think there's some big nods as to yeah. what's to come. And I think that's why she... At least that's what I'm afraid of. That's what I predict anyway, is that she's looking for him to help save Farouk's body because they need him as an ally in the future to defeat whatever it is that's killing everyone.
Something, yeah.
And something that's killing everyone. Like, he kills a few people, this thing kills everyone. And I'm afraid that it's David, that it's
yeah.
he's going to grow more powerful and that he's going to become more insane, and he's gonna, I think his, or I'm afraid his comic version of himself is like gonna come to fruition, that
yeah.
we see peaks of that coming, because I think it, you know, she's saying that she never thought she'd see him again like this, and so it makes me question, like, how is it young, or like she said, sweet, she mm-hmm. she said you're sweet,
not a villain.
Yeah, not a villain. She seems sad, she seems scared of him. She yeah. didn't answer him when David asked if he was dead, just that, like you said, it's
right.
complicated.
Or do you want to see me again, like, not very strong response there.
Yeah, well, and he's like, do you want to, and because he says, do you want to see me again, and she just kind of looks at him, he's like now, like I am right now, not how she maybe last remembers him, but like mm-hmm. how he is now, still sweet, and she just nods yes. I think another red flag that I had in that scene was that he can't read Sid's mind.
Right.
They say it's because that she's in the future, but I think that's BS, because I think the reason why, because he's a really strong telepath, and I think the it's one of two things. Either when you can't read someone's mind, it's either because nothing's there, like it's not real, or that there's another even more stronger telepath or something blocking
yeah
him
I
from
mean
reading her
I
thoughts.
Think for story reasons, if we're right that David turns into a monster, then they wouldn't want to have him be able to read her mind, because he'll see that and it'll give it away, you know?
Right.
So that's for a story reason. Also, another reason could be that we're totally wrong about all this and Sydney is not what she seems to be and he shouldn't be trusting her, which on this show is, you know, at least a 20% possibility.
Yeah.
You know, they get us to think it's one way and then it's something completely different. I mean, I don't think so. I think what we're saying is right, but you just don't know.
You don't know. I think that it's too hard to really predict, and every time you think you have it figured out, they yank the rug out from underneath you. So, I mean, that's where I think it's kind of going, or at least that's where I feel like we're getting a glimpse of anywhere. Because, I mean, we've seen what David looks like when he's completely unchained, and you know, the kind of chaos that comes about when he's unleashed. And it seems like, you know, she is encouraging him to help the Shadow King in order to give the world that extra ally for when he goes rogue. How messed up is that?
I know.
Save the Shadow King because we need him to defeat Kill a future you.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. And then, like, and again, she wasn't in this scene. I think it was the same as like in the first episode that we totally looked over, where she was missing her arm, but she also wasn't wearing a glove again. And the future Cid wasn't wearing a glove. She was still missing her arm. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if she wasn't wearing a glove because we saw how she's been practicing like switching bodies with this cat, with her cat, and like trying to harness and control her powers. So I wonder if she's now in this future learned to control her powers where she doesn't have to worry about the touch and switching bodies with someone, if she's able to control that, and if maybe she's compensated for missing her arm, her left arm, and that she doesn't need the glove anymore.
Yeah, or maybe it signifies that she has switched bodies in the future and someone else is in her body. I mean, I don't think so, but maybe. I'm just putting it out there.
I mean, at this point, anything is really possible with this show.
Another thing that I thought was interesting is right after David gets into this fight with Clark, the interrogator, and then he goes back into his room and he's kind of pissed off. You see the little, well, I think it's the little delusion chick, the alien tar slime thing.
Yeah, that little slime trail. Yeah,
crawl like under his bed or something. And to me, that says there's a delusion forming in David's mind. And I think if he does turn into a bad guy, it's going to be because, you know, he gets this idea in his head and he thinks he's doing what's right and it kills all the other rational ideas. But, you know, that's usually how bad guys work, is in their own mind. They think they're the good guy. So for some reason, he'll think that whatever he's doing is right and it ends up being destructive.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what his conversation was with Clark too, because he's like, you know, hey, you used to be the bad guy, and Clark's like, well, that's funny. You were the bad guy to me.
And if you look, Clark's got his face burned off and he's had a pen stuck through his face. And it's like, who's the bad guy here?
Yeah. Kind of like the whole Rick and Negan thing.
Kind of. But Clark doesn't have a harem, as far as we know.
No.
I didn't say it was a
one-to-one. I'm just stating, you know, how we perceive, how each person perceives the other. And that's what a lot of this talks about, is like the perception of reality, right? That's what they go on and on about. And what they talk about in this episode is the perception of reality.
And I mean, with Clark, though, I'm more like, oh, yeah, I totally buy into it. Like, if we had seen the story back from the beginning from his point of view, I think he would be the hero of the story. You know, with Negan, I don't know. I might still be going, like, if he was my friend, I'd be like, dude, you gotta like knock it off with that bat. Okay. Mine, you kind of mentioned it, but the face off with Farouk, I think it's pretty significant that at least we think we're seeing the actual representation of what Farouk looked like when he had a physical body. And I agree with you. The dude played it really well. Like, why did you think he played it well? What did you like about his portrayal?
I thought that he had this charisma about him and this confidence. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he owned that shit. And he was like, you know, we are gods. We're bigger than Jesus. And, you know, telling David, I just love that whole thing. He's telling David, it's, you got to grow your mind. It's time to step up.
Right.
Off the kiddie table. Join
he,
the big.
He kind of gaslighted him. Because he said, oh, you feel boohoo, used. Now we need to figure out if you're mad at me or yourself. After he got into this kid in the womb and fucked with him for his whole life up until a year ago. And now he's trying to blame it on him, right? And, and then that, you know, is his way of getting him off balance. So then he can pretend to be a source of power for him. You need to step into your power. All these things that you're saying, you know, we're like gods and it's all about respect and all this stuff. That was really interesting. But yeah, I thought he was commanding and kind of a dominant, and just the, you could see him being invasive into people's psyches the way he is. So they picked a really good actor for this.
I totally bought it that he was the Shadow King. He had a great presence about him, and he really owned who he was and relished it. He relished his power.
Potential weakness is he seems like the kind of guy that will get bent out of shape if he doesn't get the respect he feels he deserves, you know, and get reactive to that. And so I wonder if that might be some kind of a angle to get at him or something like that. I mean, guys who are really, really just so dependent on that respect can be thrown off when they don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So he says if David helps him that he'll be in David's debt, and where he comes from, debt is something that must be honored. Do you believe that?
I do. I believed him when he said it.
Hmm.
I don't know that I believed everything. Maybe, I don't know that I believed everything that he said, because I do think that he'll say what he needs to say to get David where he wants him. But I do believe that part.
I think I believe it too. I mean, even, you know what's really funny is when he tries to get fake Oliver and Lenny to promise not to kill, and they're both like, meh. And then later with Farouk, when he's his normal self, he's like, can you promise not to kill? He's all, nah. And
he's grumbling about it. He's like, but then, oh, no, it's no fun.
Yeah. No fun, but okay. And the fact that he did resist but then gave in makes me feel like maybe he does honor his word. Otherwise, why not just say yes right away if you're going to lie about it, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe he is honorable.
Why make a big production about, you know, about it and just say, okay, yeah, whatever.
Sure.
Well, yeah. He kind of did that, because when they were on the carousel, David's like, you can't hurt anybody. You know, he agreed to take them out to the desert to get them away from the compound. And then, you know, Farouk comes in as Oliver and Lenny, and they're taking guards out. They took out 11 men, turned one into a pig,
so
and one
cool.
into a fish.
The way
it
they
was
like
super cool. It was
dispersed
super cool. But,
them
you
into
know.
This black particulate.
Yeah, doing this whole and song and dance, and they're just kind of, you know, swaying through
let's
the,
turn
the
this
hall,
one into
and
a
they're
fish.
Singing, and they're just like, push, push.
That was so cool. Just, stylish.
It was. I know, it was like so Sinatra.
it was like a Natural Born Killers with, you know, superpowers.
You didn't, I don't think you liked that movie though, right?
I fucking hated it, but I liked the scene.
I thought it was super cool. So they agreed on the carousel. They're like, you can't hurt anybody.
They did
like,
agree.
Okay.
I don't think they really agreed. I think
they were
like, meh.
They were like, oh, yeah, okay.
Really?
I'm pretty sure they agreed. Right. And that's why David was kind of
I thought
pissed
they were noncommittal.
Because, well, that's why David was so upset, because
yeah.
they had agreed. Or Farouk, I say.
Then we
they,
can't trust
he,
him then. He yeah, already lied.
Well, to me, I think he did lie.
Yeah, you're right.
I thought they agreed.
Well, you
well
just
on the
said
carousel,
you believed
I thought they
him
agreed.
A second ago. Yeah, that's why he decided, oh, well, this plan isn't working. You know, I was going to hide this everyone like from everyone, like Future Sid said, help Farouk find his body, but now they're killing people, so now I have to trick Carrie into turning this tank into a machine that lets me go into the future so I can talk to Future Sid and say and clarify, like, really, is this what you want me to do, because they're killing people. And I don't know if he really did clarify that with her, but then he decided to go back and tell current Sid. So it was them just killing people in that hall that made him rethink the whole thing.
Yeah, because I know he felt really bad about it. He was feeling, you know, after that happened, he was feeling really remorseful and feeling bad about helping to agree to help him and help Farouk, because he hurt people.
Right. Yeah, what would I do at this point? I don't know. I would want to talk to Future Sid some more and be like, look, tell me what's going on here. I need to know what exactly is going on so I can figure out the right thing. And then Future Sid says, well, you turn into a monster. And then I'd be like, all right, I'll just kill myself.
You're such a hero.
The only other thing I wanted to mention about Farouk is this whole, they did another kind of mental representation of struggle, but it was wrestling.
Yeah.
And it was super fun, because he's like, you're strong, but you're playing the wrong game. And then he turns into a samurai, and David's like, oh, yeah. And he turns into a tank. It's like two little kids.
Like little kids how they're one-upping each other on the playground.
And it was awesome that he was a tank, and then he fired, but then Farouk turns into this black smoke, like the smoke monster or something, and then they do this overhead view of him firing into it, and it looked beautiful, and
it was
just fucking awesome scene.
This dance, that's what it was, like Farouk said, he's like, oh, we dance, and that's what they were doing, is they were dancing, and I really loved it.
Yeah, so good. I love the show. All right, what's your number four?
My number four is The Orb. We got a little bit of info that I thought was really interesting. And something interesting that Carrie said, you know, he's talking to Carrie, the female Carrie inside of him, as he's examining the orb in his lab. And he's talking to Carrie about it. And he's like, you know, no, I don't think it's from, I'm going to mispronounce it, from Shi'ar. I don't know if am I pronouncing that right, which kind of, I think, is expanding the...
Is he talking about the aliens?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even hear that. You sure?
You didn't hear that?
Really? Oh, that's awesome.
I am 100% positive because on the second showing, I always turn on closed captioning, which I don't normally like watching shows in closed captioning. It's S-H-I.
Oh, yeah.
And then A-R, Shi'ar.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, do you know what that is?
I do know what it is.
What is it?
I don't... Oh, God. I don't have it all written down.
No, I can say it. I mean, what I know is it's an alien species that the X-Men have been in contact with. And there's this princess, Lilandra, who was Professor X's girlfriend for a long time.
Wife.
But she's not the mother of David Haller in the comics. But she just dated him, Professor X, for a long time. And she even, like, provided some kind of technology that let him walk around without his wheelchair.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And gave them a ton of technology that they could use in their danger room so that they could have more realistic scenarios where they're training holograms and things like that.
Right. So they have very advanced technology. So, you know, that's what they're kind of talking about, because this orb was so advanced. And when female Carrie internally made that comment, you know, because it was so advanced, he's like, nope, I thought it was, and I can see why you would think it is, but it's not. I don't think it's really going to mean anything as far as, like, are we going to see them? Is it going to more mention of them? I don't know. I kind of thought maybe it was a nice little nod to the comics.
Might just be a throwaway, yeah.
Yeah, just like, oh, that's kind of nice, you know, for all the comic fans out there, but I thought that was just really interesting. But Carrie feels that he made the orb.
Yeah, so he goes, I think it's constructed by me, so it's future Carrie.
Yeah, future Carrie helping maybe a future Sid. So, I mean, that kind of makes sense if you have that connection that maybe it really is Sid. I know we don't really trust that is really Sid. So if it makes you kind of lean, or at least for me anyway, lean more towards that is really Sid, because if, you know, that her and Carrie are still working together,
right,
and that they're still, you know, working together in the future. So that helped me, you know, at least lean towards that. And then I also, just because I love Bill Irwin so much, yeah, he's such a quirky character, and the orb shoots sparks and he kind of rears back. It's like,
I like him because he can vacillate between being kind of authoritative but in a snotty way, and then like a little kid, like when he got sucked through the floor or right before that, he was like, I'm scared, Carrie, because she's his protector. So a lot of times he's like a father figure to her. Oh, I'm so sorry about her. But then when it comes to danger, he's like, oh, protect me.
Yeah, super sweet. I he's got lots of facets to his character, and I really love him. But love I thought that was worth mentioning, that little blurb we got with him examining the orb and that little mention of that alien race from the comics.
I think it's interesting that Carrie, I don't remember if it was so much like this last season, maybe I'm just not remembering, but this season it seems like he can do almost anything. Like, here's a compass that only points to you, or you want to go into the future? Sure, I'll just whip
we'll
up
plug
that
you up.
Thing and you know, you might explode, but yeah, it'll be fine. And I'm totally fine with that, because it just feels like the comics are totally like that. It's very comic booky,
right? Well, and he has Summerland's, you know, lab, his lab at Summerland looked pretty cool and stuff, but it looked somewhat archaic maybe, and now he's at Division 3. So we don't know what he's learned in this whole year with a whole team of people. It seemed like it was just him when he was at Summerland. Now he's got this whole team of people, plus he's got access to probably like this unlimited technology and how he can like further expand his research. So it kind of makes sense that he can kind of do maybe a little more than what we saw in Season 1.
It's just to make a machine, I never thought of that, but yeah, let's have it throw you into the future. It's just so far out, but it's a comic book show. So, I mean, they couldn't do this in almost any other type of show.
Well, I bet some of it has to do with David's power, too, because I think power was able to intercept the fact that he didn't get blown up whenever he was like, oh, you might get blown up. And I think David was helped to kind of, that his something with his power was able, I think that's something that just works in unison a little bit. It's not just the machine itself.
I mean, yeah, all I'm saying is, like, you couldn't do this on some cop show or something. No. You know,
nope, it's a comic book show.
Yeah, it's a comic book show. And last season, it didn't seem quite as comic booky, but now they're really going for it. You mentioned archaic. I like that it still has an old school feel. So even though it's, you know, technology that's more advanced than anything this planet will probably ever see, it still looks like an old fashioned telephone switchboard where they're plugging cables into holes. Because that's the style.
Let's try this line. Yep.
That's cool. Okay. My number four, let's see. Well, it's all about David and future Sid. And well, I thought it was interesting when they're together in the room, in their future room, whatever that was.
The purple and black.
Yeah. That there's these little buzz skips. It's like a little disorienting. And it reminded me, it was good. Otherwise, besides that, high def, it's like when you're on Skype and it sounds really good, but occasionally it skips out. And you think, oh, this connection could just sever at any moment. It's high quality, except for these little like artifacts of crappiness. It just kind of reminded me of that. But then also when future Sid was explaining to what happened in the future, there was a huge yada 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 in the middle there. She says, it started like any idea as an egg, and then you see the ruined world that she lives in, and then the few of us that were left went into hiding. Like, there's a lot missing in the middle.
And then we all went hiding. I know, I thought the same. I was like, how did we get from here to over here? Right. What happened there in the middle?
And I feel like that's all about David. I mean, the idea and the egg, you know, we got that whole illustration from John Hamm last with the slimy delusion chick that we saw go into David's bedroom. So they're just giving us a lot of hints that something is awry with him. I guess that's about it. The only other question I had is, it really seemed like David decided to be totally on the up and up with Sid and tell her exactly what happened. And I think he was in this case too, but I have a question about it. He asked her, or she asked him, did you create that music box? Because I didn't like that. And he says, no. But I thought it was him because they were talking about a diversion when the episode first opened up. Maybe it was Farouk that created the diversion though, huh? I guess that's the idea.
But Farouk got it from David, I bet. Because he...
So you think he's still lying a little bit? Made it sound like he didn't have anything to do with it.
I know, he made it... I don't know what... If he was telling the truth in that or not. He seemed like he was telling the truth, but I don't know if somehow Farouk was able to get that, like he
pull it from
somehow
him.
Was able to get it from some sort of like psychic connection or something, or some sort of telepathy that with a connection, because he can still read his mind. They can still read each other's minds. They're both highly telepathic. And then if Fruit was able to draw that information out of David, that maybe he didn't give it to him directly, but it was more indirectly that he gave up that information and was able to create that.
Yeah, I think that's right. Because it really did seem in that instant that David believed he was telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, okay. Number three.
My number three is this monk business.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, while Oliver and Lenny are creating havoc, while they're at Division 3, they are needing that diversion because they're needing to look for something at that location, and that is this monk. And Oliver stumbles across Melanie, who her elephant apparently just stays on like a humidifier.
Hallucinogenic humidifier or something.
It's just constantly going.
Yeah. She's in a bad state.
She's not
totally pissed off because she subverted all her desires in life to just devote herself to her husband's dream or boyfriend or whatever. And now she feels totally abandoned by him.
Yeah, like she didn't have any dreams. She just followed Oliver because he had one. She's like, why not? I don't have anything else better to do. So let's just fulfill your dream. And then he disappears for 20 years. And that's she was trying to continue his dream of what he wanted. So she's continuing that. He comes back. He leaves her again. Granted, I don't really see it was his fault the second time around, as he was, you know, just like taken against his will. But, you know, he visits her. She gets a visit from Oliver or Farouk. I am wondering if Oliver was able to really slip through there and speak to her a little bit, or if I mean I know we don't know, but I'm feeling almost more it was more Oliver trying to get through to her and speak to her psychically about this monk. And he asks her if the monk is there at Division 3, the monk of the Migo order. And then we see him appear at the end with the teeth chattering people in that room where those people are. And we saw him in the first episode as well, during that whole dance battle.
Just kind of skulking like milling around between people.
Yeah, he was just kind of, you know, everybody's kind of dancing and he just kind of looks over and he's just walking through the crowd, bumping into people. So the story with the monks that once, I guess, Professor X had taken or separated his mind, Farouk's mind, from his body, and he took his mind or took his body and it was given to the monks to hide. So do the monks have the body? Are questions that I have. And then who is this Miser Sunday? Does it even matter who this Miser Sunday is?
Maybe it's a day.
Right. Maybe. Okay. Maybe I'll go with that. Miser
Sunday. I think it's a person. Yeah.
And then I thought it was interesting when David asked the question, whenever he's in front of the Vermilion and Melanie and Sid are in the room with him and you know, Melanie's telling them about this. And as soon as they are questioning that, they then turn around the Vermilion. David asks a question we all want to ask, you know, okay, so do they have the body? Where are these monks? Do they have the body? And then they immediately turn around and the Vermilion accuse him of lying to them. So I just thought that
was interesting. Is that what you call
them? Why? Yeah, that's what they're called.
Okay, good. I didn't have a name, so I'm glad to have that.
Vermilion.
Yeah, they say there's a 67% chance you're lying. And, and Melanie says, lying about what? And they say, everything. And he says, that's a lot.
I know. I feel so much. David is like, I feel like I can relate to David so much.
Really?
And his reactions, because he's like, you know, I'm asking, he's asking the questions that I'm asking. And then like his reactions to everything, I feel it's like, that's me. Cause that's how I'd react. Because when he walks into the room, when the Carries are trying to like merge back together and male Carrie goes into female Carrie and she turns around and his arm is sticking out of her chest, the look on his face and he just goes, and he goes, whoa.
Right.
And then whenever he's also, when they're out in the car riding to the desert and, you know, he's sitting in the middle between Ptolemy and Sydney, and he's just eyeballing those Vermilion. They're just like sitting there, like all autonomous and blank faced, and they're just sitting there, like riding down the road in the desert. And he's just looking at them, like, "What the fuck?"
Right.
Not knowing or understanding what they are. I'm like, dude, I can so relate to that, because you're asking the questions I would ask, you're having the reactions that I would have, and it just cracks me up. So anyway, that's my number three, is just this monk business, because now we're given some new information of you know, we kind of get a little bit insight as to what they were looking for at Division 3 and some insight as to who may have his body. And I mean, this may not even be like the bigger story. I feel like there's probably something more looming on the surface or that we haven't quite gotten to yet. I think we're scratching that surface a little bit, but I don't even know at this point if it matters that Fruit gets his body or not, or who has it. I think there's something more happening.
Yeah, and well, we also don't really know much about this monk. I mean, the show is good about giving little hints and clues of things, but having different parts of the plot and story develop at different paces. And so far, I think with the monk, we haven't really gotten much of his full story yet, and we will. So there's, at mm-hmm. least from what I can tell, there's not much to go on yet. It's like, all right, let's wait and see what the fuck is up with this guy. I don't know if he's a good guy. I don't know if he's the one causing the tea chattering because he's hanging out with them. Probably not. But what does he want to be found? Does he not? Does he actually have the body? What, you know, just all kinds of questions that can't be answered right now. So you mentioned David and Potonomy and the Vermilion in this truck. And I thought that was so funny because he's like kind of studying them and how many are there? No one knows. And then all of a sudden he goes, all right, stop the truck. And it seems like he's saying, I don't trust these guys. I'm getting out. And then, but then Sydney goes, why? And he goes, we're here. It's just so funny the way the show kind of messes with you. I'm sure that was like an actor choice maybe, but I love it. And I also thought it was cool that there's no windows on the truck or anything, but David just knows because he's superpower guy.
Yep.
Oh, here we are
psychically.
Yeah. And then my number three actually dovetails with what you were saying about how David kind of speaks for us, because it's about the nature of Lenny. And I like the way that in the very first scene he responds to Aubrey Plaza's character the same way, at least I do. She's all, remember when you used to get high and you'd ask every time, why is it blue? And I would say, it's always blue, man. And he goes, yeah, except that never happened. That's a fake memory. I didn't meet you till the hospital. And that's what I'm thinking. Like, that really didn't happen, right? I'm not sure what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
I love that he did that. But I think I kind of have Lenny more figured out than I did last week, because I think that she actually was a real person, and he met her at the hospital and they were friends. And then when Sydney and him accidentally switched bodies, and Sydney was suddenly in David's body but had all this power and lost control, and just like the doors disappeared and Lenny was stuck in the wall and dead.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, dead. And Farouk used her visage after that.
Yes.
And maybe also claimed her consciousness so he could have it within himself, because now in this season we are seeing her every time we see her, it's Lenny, but it's just a consciousness, no corporeal form, right? Isn't that what you're getting from all that?
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was in her yellow overalls, which or cover whatever that she had from season one.
Jumper.
Yeah.
The big question is, why did, I guess it was Amal that made David think that all his memories of this druggy jerk off Benny, who was a dude, was Lenny, because he was remembering all that as Lenny for a while there. And I'm not sure exactly why that would be, but that's what happened. So it made it seem like he knew her before he got to the hospital, but it turned out he really didn't, and it was really that guy.
Maybe to create a history that they had maybe a longer history together.
Yeah.
Than what they really did.
And then what's even weirder is if what we're seeing right now is actually the consciousness of Lenny, who he met in the hospital, then why was she talking about those times with Benny when they're in the little, you know, merry-go-round?
The carousel.
Yeah. I mean, I really think one possible answer to all these questions I'm asking right now is that the goal of Noah Hawley, the showrunner with his show, is to try and make us feel what it's like to be crazy. And I think a lot of times what it is like is that you feel like you have a grasp on what reality is and what connections, and then it starts slipping away because something doesn't quite add up. And I hear if you take some really like heavy doses of hallucinogens, you can recreate that, from what I've heard.
From what you heard?
Yeah. Where you just can't quite, you know, you think you know what's going on, and then something just, oh, wait, no, I was completely wrong about that. And it's kind of like you're trying to climb up a hill and it's slippery, and you you can't quite get a foothold and you think you have a hole, but then you slip, you know, but it's in your mind. Like, I think watching the show is like that sometimes. Oh yeah, I think I understand. And, but oh, there's this one thing that doesn't fit in with that at all. And it makes me feel like maybe I don't understand anything and I'm just crazy, you know?
Well, I think that's the whole, kind of the whole point is maybe he's trying to, because this whole show I feel is more, it's not for information. It's more of an experience. It's an experience driven show. And for me, I feel like it kind of puts you into that experience of what it's like to maybe not feel sane a little bit and to know what's real. And then the whole thing about perception of reality, it's like we don't know what's real in this. And I think we're dipped into this universe.
But it could be that there is an actual reality that the author has in mind. And maybe part of it is that Farouk is just trying to make people crazy, including us, by creating these inconsistencies in what we perceive as reality. But later on in the episode, when you know, David and Farouk are on the astral plane and then David leaves and then Lenny shows up, in that moment it seems totally clear that that's Lenny, because she's asking to be let free, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems completely clear that it's her and she wants out now.
Agreed.
So, and another thing that's interesting is if that is her and he keeps her around, and even David says he likes to keep other personalities around because he like hides in them or something. But anyway, he also gives her seemingly some pretty hardcore telekinetic powers, because you saw Oliver and her walking through that hallway and she turned somebody into a fish. So I guess he like lent her the power or something to do that.
I think it's just another way when he was using her in like season one, he's using not just one, he's using both of them.
Mm. So sometimes it actually is him.
I think so. I think through that hall, I think when they were going through the hallway, that was, they're both being like, I don't know if you'd say possessed or just whatever. Mm. They're being, you know, he's okay. Working through them is how I take it. Just like the same whenever he took over David and David went kind of whole crazy there at Division 3. Mm. that we saw that, you know, in the same way that he uses Oliver, he's using, I think, both Lenny and Oliver.
Okay.
In that scene.
Yeah.
That's just what, I don't know if it's real.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's for sure.
Know.
But
that kind of makes
that's
sense.
Just, that's like, just my take on it.
Yeah, right.
Because she doesn't have any powers. I don't think she's, I mean, she's not.
No.
You know, she doesn't have any powers and she has no powers that he can draw off of.
Maybe he could, you know, I don't know. It's kind of dumb to even talk about this, but like he could say, all right, you're a hologram and we're going to go through and kill these people and I'm going to just, you know, whoever you point at will die. Mm-hmm. He probably has the power to do that, maybe.
Maybe.
Or, yeah,
I don't,
maybe he could just be, that could just be two manifestations of his own psyche.
I don't discount anything in this show, just because I don't know.
All
I
right.
know nothing.
What's your number two of not knowing anything?
Well, there's a longer list than just my top five of not knowing anything, but just for this particular episode, it's another comic nod. And you mentioned Lenny pleading with Farouk to let her go because she's been absorbed by Farouk in his mind and he continues to use her for his own end. And she wants Farouk to bend reality so she can get a body and live. She wants to, you know, she's like, hey, just do your thing and I want to go live. And I think that was kind of interesting because it's like, again, what I was talking about earlier with the orb, and they kind of had that little nod to that alien race. That does this mean that the show is eventually going to be heading to comic territory as Farouk has absorbed Oliver and Lenny in his mind, like David absorbs people's psyches into his own in the comics? Because that's what he does into the comics, right? And that's what kind of like how he grows his power and how he kind of like really like kind of goes rogue and.
Well,
thing.
Yeah, in the comics, I don't know if I want to get into it too much because it might be a spoiler for the future of the show.
Right, but so, okay, well, I won't say any more either, just from what I know, but I just thought it was kind of interesting that it feels that maybe, because it feels like, I mean, the show, the title of the show is called Legion.
Right,
which
means a lot of people.
Right, and we've talked a lot about that. You know, we talked about in the last episode, some of what that meant in the comics and the origin of that. And I think that that's maybe what this is, a little bit. The show is about the origin of David Haller and Legion.
Mm-hmm. Because so far, he's not really the character that he is in the comics. He's not.
Right.
Yeah, the idea behind Legion is that there's a legion of people in there. And you hear all these whispers, but they're kind of subverted. And I've said before, I think maybe part of that was because Farouk was keeping them under control, in which Aaron pointed out was kind of like Saddam Hussein. And now that Saddam's out of power,
dictator,
they can all surface. So maybe it's like that.
Right. Yep. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And it just made me wonder if that's where we're headed for however long that the show continues, if maybe just the, like, season one was beginning this origin, mm-hmm. and we're getting that origin story of the comics, and maybe if that's, you know, and I mean, I'm sure it will differ. I'm sure he'll probably try to make it his own, but
oh yeah.
You know, I still feel
that's
like
clear. Yeah.
Yeah. But
for one thing, David has spiked up hair in the comics. I don't see that happening ever on the show.
No.
I don't think
not.
So. It wouldn't. I don't think Dan Stevens has the right build for that. In the comics, David Haller is younger and he's super skinny. And Dan Stevens just seems like an average build to him.
Yeah.
So I don't think. I think it would look really weird. I wonder if they've ever tried it just to see how it would look, and they're like, nope.
Nope. I think we'll just keep you as is. I don't know if it's important that he look exactly like his comic book character or not.
But it's so iconic to the character in the comic. Like, that's just who he is. But yeah,
I get it.
Doesn't have to look like that.
No, maybe he'll morph into something similar. Maybe they'll try to take a spin on it or something and make it their own as if this is the path that they're taking as it progresses. Maybe it will eventually get there, but yeah, that's my number two.
Another comic nod is, I think it's because Carrie and Carrie's situations are reversed, that now girl Carrie is the one that's always out in the world and guy Carrie lives inside of her and could come out occasionally, that she has a gray streak in her hair, and that's a rogue. That's from Rogue in the comics. I wonder, because I think Noah Hawley likes to steal ideas from X-Men but remix it.
Yeah.
Because even Sydney, she kind of has Rogue's power, sort of. Not really, but anyway.
Sort of with the power of touch, where Rogue kind of like
Rogue
takes
absorbs,
the energy from.
Yeah.
Yeah, she absorbs that energy and that life force, whereas she just switches bodies, but it's still like she can't touch people.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. And she doesn't like to be touched and stuff. So there is that similarity anyway. Mm-hmm. And I kind of took that gray streak that Carrie had, that she was aging. You know, because she only ages when she's outside of Carrie's body, and she was outside like for a long time.
Yeah, maybe it's like catching up with her too.
Yeah,
more quickly.
I think it's catching up with her, and maybe the stress also of what she's going through, because she seemed to be really out of sorts. Like she was, you know, looked to be pained and, you know, laid on the table for a long time as they're trying to kind of figure out what's happening and how they can be able to switch back and what happened. And I think that the whole process was aging her. And I think that's a little bit of what that was too. That's my take on it.
My number two is actually Carrie and Carrie, and the scene where we talked a little bit about it, where Oliver and Lenny show up to find the monk, and they kind of terrorize the two Carries.
Mm-hmm.
And like guy Carries holding up a spoon, which I think is just because that's what he had in his hand. Right?
What was he going to do with that spoon?
And I'm like, how did the writers figure this out? Because then Lenny just flicks it. Ding, and then there's this vibration, and I just thought that was so cool. Like, how would you even think about that? And then meanwhile, girl Carrie is all like confident, but then as soon as that vibration happened, she froze and couldn't move. And then Jermaine Clement starts growing in size in the hallway,
towers over her.
Yeah, it's just really exciting, and I mean, I love
scary.
It because I've seen so much stuff in movies and TV. And it's rarely fresh, and stuff is going on in this show I've never seen before. Every episode something happens. I've never seen anything like it before, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. I like that. We already talked about everything else that I thought Amber Midthunder did a damn good job of taking the place of the person who has someone inside them, and she's having a conversation with them, but we can't hear the other side of the conversation. She's like, no, you're too loud. Is that what I sound like? You know, like that. It's just, she did a great job.
Cause that's, I mean, it was total reversal. She's always in mail carry, and I don't know that we've ever had that or seen that before, and they've never experienced that before where it's been reversed like that. So it was really good to see her be very uncomfortable, because she's always such a really strong female character.
Yeah.
And she's always, you know, in control and you know, confident in what she's doing and fighting and such. And then to see her at this level of being uncomfortable and unsure and scared, because they haven't had that happen before. They don't know if they can get carried back out. They don't know if they're going to be able to go back to normal like the way that they were. So it was really good to kind of see that. And yeah, she played it really well. And that whole scene where Oliver and Lenny are terrorizing them, and when Carrie gets pulled into his room and he thumps on the floor and he's kind of shaken and he kind of shakes his head a little bit, and then he looks in the corner and you don't see anything at first, and then all of a sudden you do, and you see those yellow eyes. Yeah. Holy That's shit. Freaky. I was scared because I was watching it in the dark.
That actually makes me think you're right, come to think of it, that maybe that's a manifestation of Farouk then, because last season we saw all the yellow-eyed creatures were the Shadow
Devil
King.
With the yellow eyes is what they called him. Mm-hmm. Devil with the yellow eyes. And that's what he kept having all throughout. Like whenever he was like the big, what did Aaron call him last week? The
Bat
big
bastard.
Fat man or fat bastard.
That's from, what do you call it? Austin Powers, by the way.
Okay.
That's
well,
a character, fat bastard. Well, I like that they're both rattled and uncomfortable with this, even though they just switch places and it's like, hey, maybe you would actually like to be free. But no, this, I love it when a show really gets human nature, and in this case, human nature is that we get comfortable with the way our lives are, no matter how weird they might seem to somebody else. And if we get forcefully removed from that and thrown into a whole new situation, we're going to be anxious about it. And that's how they are.
Yeah. So she was very anxious. She's like, I don't want to be on that
the
out
boring
all the time.
Times. Yeah. And he's like, it's small in there. So yeah, they just are not comfortable with it.
Yeah.
They'll get used to it. It'll be good for them.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. I guess they can adapt if they have to, but right now they can't. They want to just get
hard,
back to normal.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if they can like merge.
Maybe they won't. But I mean, I also think, even though I just said what I said, that it's good for us to all get out of our comfort zones, it's probably better if we do it little by little and it's by our own choice than being forced into it. But still, I think if you get out of your comfort zone a little bit, then you'll just expand yourself, you know, and that's always a good thing, even though it might be uncomfortable at first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's your
I'll
number
give you
one?
That. Well, we covered my number one pretty much already, talking about David and future Sid and that whole scene. And we talked about, you know, how kind of odd it was. We talked about the little weird glitches. That was definitely something that I wanted to mention, and how she was scared and I think really sad. And he's like, you know, he's like, you're different. And she's like, well, time does that to people.
Yeah. And that the implication there is, and you too.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like that's why I just feel like somehow we're leading into something that David is going to become more, and he's going to not be as great of a character and not be the hero, that he's going to turn into something bad.
I think he'll still be a great character, but yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mean not great character. I just meant a good character.
Good guy,
I meant good and not great, but I think he'll still be a great character for sure, but that he's going to transform into someone who's not a good guy anymore. He's going to be the bad guy, because it wasn't so much what she said in that scene, it's what she didn't say.
Yeah.
And that's what I picked up on so much. Right. So
she seemed like, I don't know, two people dating, and one person finds out something really shitty about the other person, but doesn't want to let them know they know. But they're just, their whole like vibe changes. Like, no, I don't like you anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Okay. My number one is that this show episode talked a lot about the nature of reality and different viewpoints of reality. We talked about one example with Clark, where to him, he always thought he was the good guy, and that made sense to me. But also there was Oliver saying early on, when David was trying to figure out what the truth was about Lenny, You know, you didn't even exist. He goes, bodies and minds, humanity. Nobody has ever asked a puma its opinion or a stalk of asparagus how it feels. My associate is who she needs to be at this moment. And later, the narrator, what's his name?
John Hamm.
He says, a wise man once said that reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away. To me, that's such a comforting statement.
Yeah.
Philip K. Dick wrote that. Or he actually said it in a speech talking about how media and government can shape our reality by controlling words and meaning. And Philip K. Dick is the perfect person to quote because this whole story could be a Philip K. Dick story. His stories are all about shifting realities and you can really feel crazy reading some of his stuff. If you want to feel insane, read The Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch where... you never quite know what the hell is going on. But then Farouk, later when he's in his like dominant mode, you decide what is real and what is not. You, your will, you are the creator of reality. So I think that's his point of view, that I'm a god and I'm going to make reality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then the narrator talks about the tick and the dog and how their perception of the world are their reality, but they're different from humans because humans are the only ones that form ideas about the world and we have to all agree on what's real. And that's why we're the only animals that go mad because we don't all agree. And I really love that. Like how societal norms change where a certain kind of joke is okay. And 10 years later, it's not, you know, because we all just shift what, our agreement about reality is basically.
Yeah, and that we live in our minds. Mm-hmm. And that's why we go mad. Well, and that's interesting that you said that because, like you said, Farouk said, you decide what's real and what's not. And then Sydney tells David later as they're up on the rooftop and he's confessing to her, you know, it was you and the orb and this is all that happened. And she tells him, she says, well, that, you know, you said reality is a choice. But David didn't say that. That was Farouk that said that. And that was, to me, like,
wondering if, like, he said it last season or something. No? I don't know.
But it was like a red flag to me. I was like, I don't think David said that.
Right.
Yeah, I like that whole scene, too. These narrations that we're getting from John Hamm are just really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the delusion one, I didn't understand last week what it had to do with anything, but it seems like the Shadow King is getting ready to seduce David into becoming a monster. He's saying, you need to step into the out of the kiddie pool. You're a god. And while Melanie is telling him, you know what? I was wrong. Your powers are not a gift. They're
an
obstacle to, you should just go live a quiet life. And he tunes her out and he starts remembering the Shadow King saying he's a god. So I don't know. I feel like that's the trajectory of this season is just him getting out of control.
Possibly.
We'll see. Well, do you have any notes or anything?
What did you make of the whole, because we were talking about reality and our perception of reality, and then where they say we don't engage directly with reality, only what we think reality is. If a child is taught his whole life that red is green, green is red, that's his reality, which soon violently collides with the rest of the world's reality. When that boy steps out into the street, humans live in our minds, so we can go mad, we can delude ourselves. I'm curious what you thought about that whole thing.
It reminded me of, this is really immature and dumb, but it was just a joke. Me and my friend Richard, who you know, we used to joke when we were like teenagers that if we ever have kids, we're going to just speak in superhero voices around them. Hello! and then that's all they'll know. Because, yeah, you absorb whatever you're around. I didn't do that. I have a 6-year-old and a 1-year-old. And they speak fine.
They don't speak superhero voices?
Sometimes. But I enjoyed that scene. It was so sadistic. And it's that sadistic humor that I really like in the show. With like last week, it was Aubrey Plaza smashing a chick, and which is horrible, but it's so bad. And then this time it's Jermaine Clement sending this kid out to get hit by a car.
Let's see what you do. I just told you that red means stop and yeah. green means go, and because that his boy has been taught true. The complete opposite. He tried to tell the kid, and it's like he just shakes his head, and he like takes him off a list.
And then he like makes a little note. Okay,
he's like, "Darn it, on to the next one."
Well, I thought there was a few funny things I have in my notes. David is having this conversation with Carrie, trying to get her to modify this tank for him. And the voices in his head are like, "You're lying. Tell the truth." And you need to talk to future Sid. Did you just give her a nickname? And then he says, the sooner we can find Farouk, the sooner we can get you guys back the way you were. And then Carrie like pauses for a second and then goes, he says that makes sense. And David's like, who? And he's confused. And she goes, Carrie, in my head. Right. So it just was funny to me that he just had a moment having a conversation with the voices in his head. And then when the person next to him did the same thing, he thought it was weird and didn't get it, you know?
He's looking at him like, you're such a weirdo.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny. What else? I think we talked about the whole tra-la-la thing. Like, I didn't really understand why singing tra-la-la, tra-la-la-la got the guy out. It like triggered a memory that helped or something. But I like that.
I think it's a show they watched as kids. And
yeah, I remember that show.
You know,
I mean,
singing, I think I read one reference. I don't know that I think it's just meant to be kind of funny. And it's because it was the banana splits.
That's what
it
was, yeah.
And they needed to split.
Oh, that's fucking it. I love it. That's so funny. Well, I thought it was funny that, you know, I think Carrie was telling her, you need to sing this song. And from inside, but we couldn't hear it. And it seems serious, like, I don't think I can do that. They might hear. And it's like, you think it's dangerous, but it's just that she has to sing the super
I'm
song.
Not
it's
embarrassed.
So cute.
Yeah, it's a really cute scene. I love the Carries. I really do. I love
Me
those
too.
Two people.
I'm going into my notes now. I like that each episode seems to have a clever presentation of FX Presents in association with Marvel Television Legion. So it's in a
crystal ball. Yes, in that crystal ball. I love how it's so imaginative every time they creatively come up with a way to introduce us to that. And that was just beautiful. The whole desert scene was just beautiful and just wonderful. I love the whole visuals.
Yeah, when they do something imaginative like that, it just makes me feel like the people working on the show care about it. An example is on Breaking Bad, how during the end credits, every episode, the music guy just made a new piece of music for it that fit the tone of the show. It feels like kind of like that. Patonomy says that these Vermilion are androids, synthetic, artificial. But when they talked to David last week, they said, when we were a boy, we had the machine put into our head. For days we screamed. The pain was in the volcano, puncturing the molten core, the device very deep in our cerebral cortex, like nails from a bomb in a public place, hardware inside software. And now we are this, the machine that bleeds. The organizing principle. So to me, that doesn't sound like they're synthetic. It sounds like they were human and had something implanted in them.
But that's because they're speaking for Fukuyami. Fukuyami was the one that had the machine implanted in him. And he can't speak. They're speaking like he's...
Got it. Okay. All right. Thank you.
He's speaking through them.
Nice.
Somehow.
All right. That's all I got. I think let's get into the news. What you got?
Okay, so our first article is from IndieWire.com. So this was just a few things that I took out of an interview that they had with director Anna Lily Amirpour. I'm probably butchering her name, so I apologize. One of the questions, they were just asking her, interviewing her about the five trippiest scenes out of this particular episode. So what they asked her, they said, what about the opening scene with the carousel? And she says, in the script originally, it was an infinity escalator, an escalator that never stops, she says. We obviously didn't have that and didn't have time to build one. So I suggested a carousel because the show really gets into these different kind of expressions of madness. The carousel is the perfect personification of going around and around in your mind and trying to look for answers. I like that. I like what she said.
She's fun, she's too.
She's super fun. So and then about the cat, and Sydney scene. She says, it was funny to watch Dan Stevens like having the conversation with the cat. I'm not going to lie. There's definitely a massively giddy amount of entertainment of just watching him do take after take after take of pleading with this cat. It's intense pleading, too. He's questioning this cat really earnestly, and he had to kind of bend down to get like eye level with the cat. And I felt the same. I just love that so much, how he is just down there with that cat and he is just like begging and pleading and talking to Sid, and it just cracks me up that he just had to do this.
The cat, you can't train a cat very well. I mean, the cat was pretty good, but the cat didn't seem that interested in what he was saying.
No, I'm like, nah, yeah. I don't really care what she says. And she I'll just say a quote what she said about later that I really like feel in tune with what she says. She says, I don't think you can really call Legion TV. I feel like it's an experience. It's about exploring sanity and madness and perception.
Yeah.
So I really like that. Next item is from The Hollywood Reporter. So Legion got nominated for a Peabody Award. The Peabody Awards honor the most powerful, enlightening, and invigorating stories in television, radio, and online media. So it's the oldest major electronics media award in the United States, and some say the most prestigious. Its rigorous juried selection system has been compared to that of the Pulitzer Prize, reflecting excellence in quality storytelling rather than popularity or commercial success. Peabody Awards are distributed annually to 30 out of 60 finalists. So it's pretty prestigious that Legion got nominated for one of these awards. Just goes to show, you know, how great it really is in the storytelling. That's so strong. The next item is also from, yeah, I thought that was super cool. That just came out today. Another item from The Hollywood Reporter. So this was taken from a red carpet interview from the Legion season 2 premiere from Noah Hawley himself, the man. So he was asked if there were any corporate issues preventing Logan star Patrick Stewart from appearing as Xavier on the show. Hawley said he was hopeful such an appearance would work out so that David could meet his father. He says it's not a rights issue or a legal issue. It's more about corporate synergy. There are a lot of people with opinions and strategies for franchise development, but I think we'll be victorious in the end because our hearts are pure. Hawley was also
he really wants it. Man, if Patrick Stewart, I feel like if he just saw the show, and hopefully he has by now, that he would want to do it and just see what a quality show it is. I just think he's that kind of guy, you know.
And I don't know for sure that he's seen it, but I know that there was last year, Dan Stevens and Patrick Stewart appeared on The Late Late Show with James Corden at the same time. That. And he was like, you know, hey, do you want to come on the show? And Patrick
You're
Stewart
my dad.
He said, absolutely. He said he was absolutely 100% in for it. So, you know, who knows? But that's all for the news.
Cool. All right. Let's get into some listener feedback.
Okay, so the first one's from Steve Brown. He says, loved it. I especially like seeing more of the Carrie and Carrie relationship. I agree.
Yeah, we did too, obviously. Lara Willie Swink says, this show is just visually delectable in every way. I indulge in every scene. I loved the camera work they used to show Carrie coming out of Carrie when in the hallway with Oliver. Female Carrie's jerky movements and Lenny appearing ghost-like in male Carrie's bedroom made my hairs stand on edge. Yeah. And despite all the visual candy, there was a lot of revelation in this episode. So we find out there was an actual Lenny in Clockworks, who's now one of Farouk's psychic hostages. We learn that something bad becomes of David in the future. He's not dead, but he's also not sweet anymore. We learn that most likely future Carrie created the orb that kidnapped David. I have a theory that future Sid might have lost her arm in a botched body swap. And did I hear Carrie mention She-R technology? I love that the show will drop comic bombshells with little fanfare and no need to explain backstory, the same way they did in season 1 when Oliver casually explained to Carrie that Amal Farouk was the parasite living in David. Or even just the whole thing with Professor X. Like, they didn't never say his name, I don't think, right? They just showed a bald guy on the chalkboard.
Yeah, in the wheelchair.
Yeah. Love that these puzzle pieces all roll out in their own time. P.S. Clark has balls of steel to be confronting an Omega-level mutant. I really fear for his mortality. And he did. He seemed like really kind of confident in the moment. But as soon as David left the room, he kind of took a breath. Oh, God. Like that.
Yeah, he was scared.
He knows to be scared.
Yeah, that's for sure. Next one is from Eric Mahler. Hello, Jason, Jim, and Aaron. I saw Legion. Where am I at in there? I saw Legion is coming back.
Before our first episode where, yeah, change of status quo.
I know. I'm just giving people shit because that's what I do. So get used to it. I saw Legion is coming back. I'm hoping you are teaming up again for podcasting. I apologize if you have already announced this. I am a dedicated listener, but I am weeks and sometimes seasons behind. Keeping you up on the cutting edge of news and tips regarding circumcision. Iceland has become the first European nation to move to outlaw male circumcision.
He linked to an article about an upcoming bill in Iceland proposing a ban on male circumcision. I don't think it's been decided yet.
Okay. So there's also some action in Denmark. With relatively low rates of HIV in Iceland and Denmark and small Jewish and Islamic populations, there may be motives other than foreskin preservation. So when did this come in and why are we talking about circumcision?
Didn't you listen to the podcast last season?
Yeah, so like a year ago.
I know. I totally forgot this, but somehow, and I shouldn't have even included this anymore, but I like included some story, like personal information about circumcision and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
But it's fun. I don't know. It's like interesting. So now.
Oh, it's interesting. I was just curious where this was coming from. I listened to it, but it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's like I read that article and I think it sounds like some of the people who are for this bill just generally think that circumcision is male mutilation, which I'm kind of on board with, but I wouldn't want to put that on everyone necessarily. I don't know, because the what he's suggesting here is that it's being used to like marginalize Muslim and possibly Jewish populations because that's part of their traditions and they don't, you know, have a big representation in Iceland, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was a topic that's like a regular topic on this podcast. So I thought it was a nice little nod to last year.
Okay, well, so now you have a female on the podcast, and I guess I better get used to talking about circumcision then and male penises more than what I normally do. So
yeah, only the male penises though.
Okay.
All right. That is our show, episode 10. Thank you so much for listening, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
I kind of skated over it last episode because I thought it was funny, but I should probably mention that you might have noticed that something's a little different about this podcast right now. And that's because a few months ago, I contacted Jim and Aaron and I let them know that my network podcast was growing and I wanted to split off and do our own Legion podcast. And they said, you know, they weren't even sure that they could fit it into their schedule. They were talking about it. They were not sure. And Jim was kind of not even that interested, only 50-50 about whether he wanted to keep doing it. And so they said, no problem. Just go ahead and do your own thing. They were just super nice and accommodating about it. And then they even said, you can keep this feed and just do it, move forward with it. So those two guys have been such good friends to me and so generous. And I'm really appreciative of that. So I just want to thank them and also to let you guys all know, I know you love them. A lot of you are Bald Move, you know, fans and everything. And so am I. And I was stoked that Aaron agreed to come on to the premiere this season. And I told him and Jim too, they can come on anytime they want. And if I don't hear from Aaron, then I'm going to definitely call him. And I'm hoping to, you know, get him back on at least a couple more times this season, maybe sometime in the middle and then for the finale or something like that.
Right? Oh yeah. That was super fun. He was super fun on that, on the last one that we did.
So, but if you listen closely to our podcast last year, you will have heard a listener email from Rima here on just about every episode. Because Rima's part of my Podcastica network. She does the Strange Indeed podcast, which covers Stranger Things and, Black Mirror and Altered Carbon and other crazy Netflix shows. And I knew you were such a big fan of this. And I really was excited to have you come in just because I like your style, but also it was really cool to get a female opinion since there's a lot of romance in this show and it'd be nice to get different perspective. So I'm glad that you decided you wanted to do it.
I'm glad I decided to do it too. It's fun. I love this damn show.
Yeah,
mind bending is what it is.
Good show.
Yeah.
So there it is, you guys. I just wanted to be clear about that and not be opaque about it. But yeah, we'll definitely have Aaron and Jim too. Anytime either one of those guys want to come back on, they're welcome. But I'm definitely going to
absolutely start that would be super fun. It. They were super gracious about the whole thing, and we're really appreciative of it. And yeah, open invitation to both of them anytime. Love to hear what they have to say about the season.
And if you want to get in touch with us, we like listener interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have questions, insights, whatever, you can email, or if you even send a voice message to us, we'll play it on the podcast and answer it. And you can do that by sending it to legion@podcastica.com.
And you can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
Right. And if you go there, every week we will put up a post on Tuesday that says, what did you think about this week's episode? And people post on there, and then we read that some of that stuff back too and answer it. And also be sure to check out all our other shows on podcastica.com. We're covering Walking Dead, you know, like I mentioned, Rima's show Strange Indeed. What else? Westworld's coming up. If you need some other podcasts, there's a bunch of
Game of Thrones Rewatch.
There. Yeah, Game of Thrones Rewatch. I'm doing 4 podcasts right now. I'm trying to think what the other one is. Oh, Ash vs. Evil Dead. So good.
Love it. Love that show.
So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you. Bye.